Well, like I said, this morning we are in part three of this five-part series called Stand for Shelby. And I'm not really sure how you effectively transition out of something like that to me having to be up here on stage and transitioning into this message, other than I know I feel like I've done a lot of talking so far, and so I want to get you guys talking just a little bit. And so I'll throw this out there and you guys can respond back just so you feel like you've had a part in today as well. Good morning. All right, we are there, we are alive, and we are awake as we jump into this whole thing called Stand for Shelby. Over the first 2 weeks, as we sort of do just a little bit of a rewind to where we've been throughout this series, we've spent the first 2 weeks really looking at these two basic concepts. Number one is, what does it look like for us individually and for us as a church to begin to stand out, and this is what you'll hear me repeat over and over again, in the right ways, at the right time, for the right reasons. What does it look like for us in our world and what we encounter every single day to not just look at standing? And then we sort of continued on last week and we jumped into this second key thought. And that was that for all of us, we encounter this world that desperately needs someone who's willing to stand up, even if everybody else is sitting down. And as we've embarked on these first two parts of this series, I've always sort of given you a warning. And the warning has always been consistent to this. I want to give you a warning that today, as we sort of go in hyperspeed through part three of this, and we look at what it really means to stand strong, what it means to keep standing for our city over a course of time, for more than just a moment, for more than just a day, for more than just an event, I would warn you this. Today is an incredible day for you to really hone in. I would challenge you to really dial in this morning, because we are going to fly through this morning in hyperspeed as we look at everything pushing towards this one day. You see, we're doing a series called Stand for Shelby because we know what's on the horizon, and that is Community Impact Day. But we also believe with all of our heart that this series is about so much more than that. You see, we want this series to be something that challenges us to stand up consistently. We want this series to be something that constantly has us looking at our city and our world through the lens of, what can I do? Maybe we should add a word in there. What else can I do? What more can I do? How can I continue to stand up and stand out for a city that's desperately looking for me to do just that? You see, our hope for this series is that this series is a catalyst for our life. And what does that mean? We want this series to spark something in every single one of us that has us feeling like, you know what, this isn't about jumping out there and standing up for one moment on one day. This is a series that has me thinking personally, that has us thinking collectively as a church. What does it look like for us to begin to stand every single day of our lives? You see, as we've walked through these first couple parts of this series, we've really looked at what it means to initially stand up. But I think what all of us come to recognize when we stand for that very first time, we begin to stand up for the people around us, we stand up for our city, we stand up for our world. As we stand up that very first time, the question in all of our minds quickly shifts in an instant from, how do I stand, to how do I keep standing? You see, don't get me wrong, standing up is a difficult, fear-swallowing challenge for all of us. Like, it's not easy by any means. Just the standing for the very first time is difficult. And those of you who have embarked on that, I commend you. Like, that's incredible. That's something that so many people in our world, so many people in the church are just not doing. They're just not standing at all. We look around and we see a sitting world and we feel like it's just easier just to blend in. And so as we stand, know that that's a huge leap for all of us, just to stand for the very first time. But I also hope that as we stand, it isn't just about standing once. It's about, okay, now that I've stood, how do I keep going? Because while the stand was hard, it won't be the most difficult part of the journey. I can promise you that. The most difficult part of any journey that we embark upon in our lives is to keep going when things get hard. To persevere. For us to continue to stand strong no matter what opposition pushes against us. For those of you who know Krista and I, you know that one very cherished member of our family is our dog. We have a chocolate lab named Sully. And Sully, when he was a puppy, he had some health problems that caused him to take all of these different medications. And for him, what they believe is that because of all these things that he took as a puppy, there was some damage done to the ligaments and some of the tendons in both of his front legs. But on the other side, the one thing that we learned really quickly about Sully was this. In at least one area of his life, this may be the only area, he is pure dog. And that is Sully loves to play fetch. He will play fetch for hours, like literally. He will not stop until you tell him that it's time to go inside, we're done. His favorite toy in all the world, I don't know if any of you guys have ever seen one of these, but it's called the Chuck It. It's actually a long stick that the tennis ball goes in so that you don't have to touch that greasy, slimy tennis ball, and you throw it out there. Anytime you pick up the Chuck It out of the toy box, he's like doing circles in the kitchen and jumping around, and he'll cry until you open the back door to let him out. But with Sully, with him playing fetch over and over and over again, and the problems with his front legs, he will just keep going and keep going and keep going and keep going until eventually he starts to limp back to you. But he'll drop the ball, you throw it again, he'll run and get it, and he'll limp back to you. And my wife and I, we have to crack up. There's every once in a while, we'll start playing fetch with him, and we'll get about to the fourth throw with Sully. And he will run out there, and he'll grab the ball, and then all of a sudden, he'll begin to walk back to us. And for us, we look at each other, and we laugh, and we've said this to each other. There's this thought running through Sully's mind right now of this. If I continue to do this, there will be pain that is going to come. And it would be so much easier if I would just quit now. It'd be so much easier for me and for my legs if I just walked straight up to the door and wanted to go back in the house. But without fail, as he walks, throw number four back and drops it at your feet, and you throw number five, he's dead sprint towards it and sprints back and just continues to go over and over and over again. You see, what does it look like for us that knowing there could be pain in our future, there could be opposition when we begin to stand, that we're making a choice that we are going to continue to keep going? Or maybe for a lot of you, you don't relate to the dog analogy. Maybe for some of you, you are runners. My brother-in-law, about a month ago, he did his very first marathon. Insane. Why anybody would do that, I have no idea. But he did his very first marathon, and so we were talking with him a little bit about the race and about what the experience was like. And one of the things that he said as we asked him about the progression through the race was, you know, getting out there and starting the race was not the difficult part. Like mile 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, those were easy. Like those were things that my training had prepared me for. To keep going, you sort of get in a rhythm, and you just keep going once you've started on this race. But he said, then there became this moment at about mile 15 or 16 where I began to experience this ridiculous pain in my legs and running through my body. And there was these moments of like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, this is just crazy. And this is just time for me just to call it quits and throw in the towel. Because as we in our lives, we continue to stand, as we continue to go through the difficulty of life, much like the marathon, as we continue to run day after day after day, there will come moments for all of us in which things will get hard. And we'll look around at everybody else sitting around us and we'll say, you know what, I think I've done enough at this point. I'm just going to sit down, and it's just for a little bit of time. It's just so I can take a little bit of a break. But what I believe to be true and why we're talking about standing strong and continuing to stand for our city and stand for our world and stand for our families and stand for our marriages, why we're talking about this and the need to keep going is because in the midst of those difficulties, when we choose to sit, it is so much more difficult to get back up and stand again. Once we sit down, it takes a little chunk out of the message that we're sending. It takes a little bit of the impact away once we choose to sit. But we maximize our impact when we prove to the world around us, when we prove to our families, when we prove to our cities that, you know what? We're willing to stand and keep standing. This isn't about a one-day event. This isn't about one moment. This is about us standing over and over and over again and fighting for our city over and over and over again and standing up for our neighbors over and over and over again and loving the people that nobody else will love. Over and over and over again. And for us, as we've walked through this series, I think what we've begun to uncover is that there's no better example for what it looks like to stand day after day after day than this one man's life. In fact, this one man showed so much courage when it came to standing day after day after day for his city, for his world, for the people around him. He did that so courageously that he got an entire book of the Bible written about his story. This man's name was Daniel. And Daniel, what we see from Daniel is that he is living in a time where everything around him seems to be crumbling, right? We talked about this. And over the last couple of weeks, we talked about Daniel's story with one particular king. Anybody remember who that was? Yes, King Nebuchadnezzar, or to make it simple on us, King Neb. And what we've seen over time is he's encountered struggle after struggle after struggle with King Neb. But where we pick up the story today, King Neb is gone. And actually, the king after King Neb is gone. And there comes this new ruler that sits on the throne as king of Babylon. And his name is King Darius. And King Darius, he begins to walk through this same journey that Daniel has already walked through with King Neb. And then right after King Neb, there was a king named Belteshazzar. And he walks through this same journey. Belteshazzar was just as evil and corrupt as King Neb was. He turned King Neb around, and then he walked through that same turnaround process with Belteshazzar. And now we see him starting right back at the beginning again with King Darius. King Darius comes into rule, and we begin to see this whole process of events start over again. On the horizon, Daniel, I'm sure, could see that trouble is brewing. And as he stands up for what he knows is right, there will be this opposition that is posed against him. This morning, we're going to start in Daniel chapter 6, right in verse 1. If you've got your Bible, you can turn there with me. If not, you can flip open what we call our weekly. Right inside there, you'll find a notes page that you can follow right along with us. Or, as you can see, you can check it out on the screen. But here is how the story begins with King Darius in Daniel chapter 6, verse 1. It says this: Darius the Mede decided to divide the kingdom into 120 provinces, and he appointed a high officer to rule over each province. The king also chose Daniel and two others as administrators to supervise the high officers and protect the king's interests. So here, basically, we have the kingdom divided into 120, for sake of what we know, 120 different states. Each state was given a governor to rule over it. But then King Darius decided, we need someone. I don't want to have to deal with all 120 of these guys. So let's appoint three that are directly below me that will oversee all 120 of these guys. They will report directly to me, and they will be my managers of the kingdom. And Daniel was chosen as one of them. And here's what it continues to say. In this role, Daniel soon proved himself more capable than all the other administrators and high officers. Because of Daniel's great ability, the king made plans to place him over the entire empire. And so here we see what's happening here. We see that Daniel is beginning to rise to power again. But in the midst of all this, there's this sort of turmoil, as you can imagine. All the other administrators, all the other governors of their states begin to realize that Daniel is the apple of the king's eye. That Daniel is more capable than all the others. And so what's their ultimate goal? Let's see what we can do to tear this guy down, right? And here Daniel hears the rumblings around him. And he begins to have this feeling, undoubtedly, that a lot of us have when we begin to stand. Like I can only imagine Daniel's feelings. Here he sits. He's in his 80s at this point. And he looks back on his life and everything that he's been through. And I can only imagine him thinking, you know, I've done a lot of good things to this point. I've stood for almost 80 years of my life. I've been a pretty good example, haven't I? I've done a lot of great stuff. And I am tired. This is ridiculous that I keep having to go through this over and over and over again and put up with these people over and over again and stand for my city and be the only one that's standing and stand for my world and stand for my people when nobody else is willing to do that. Isn't it somebody else's turn? Why do I have to be the one that's always doing this? And I can just imagine in those moments that Daniel, much like me, is thinking, well, how about just a little break? How about just taking some me time right now? And I'll just lay low. I'll just sit down for a while. But I promise someday I'll get back up and I'll stand again. But that's not what Daniel did. You see, Daniel made this resolution that I think is so powerful. He made this resolution that my God has always been faithful to me, and so I will be faithful to him. My God has always stood up for me, and so I will continue to stand up for him. I will keep standing. And what I love about this book, what I think is so powerful about the Word of God, what's so powerful about the God that we serve, is that here's this man who walked on the earth 2,500 years ago at this point, who walked through all of these things, and he was choosing to stand for his city. He was choosing to stand for his world. He was choosing to make the right choices and to show people God's love over and over and over again. And the really incredible part is that what happened 2,600 years ago in this book is still powerful and relevant in our lives today. You see, this man named Daniel, as he was walking through all of this hardship, as he was standing strong and feeling like maybe it'd just be easier to sit, as he was walking through all of that, he made these realizations. He began to believe these truths that he had to hold close to him to help him continue to stand, to help him push through day after day after day. And what's so great is that as we choose to stand for our city, as we choose to stand for our world, those same truths, those same realizations help us right here, right now, to keep standing, to stand strong, to recognize that, you know what, I'm not backing down. I'm not giving up. We as a church are going to continue to push forward. We as a church are going to continue to ask the question, what else can we do? What more can we do for our city? And so this morning, I want to help us walk through those three realizations. The first one that I think is so powerful, and it's a starting point for us, that as we realize this truth and as we hold it close to our hearts, it helps us continue to stand, is this. We have to realize that when you stand up, expect people to tear you down. When we choose to stand up, that we have to expect that other people, that other things in this world are going to try to tear us down. Here's how the story continues, right? We could see this coming from a long ways off. In verse 4, it says this. Then the other administrators and high officers began searching for some fault in the way Daniel was handling government affairs. But they couldn't find anything to criticize or condemn. He was faithful, always responsible, and completely trustworthy. He was standing up in the right way, at the right time, for the right reasons, over and over and over again, and they couldn't find anything against him. And so here's what they decided. So they concluded, our only chance of finding grounds for accusing Daniel will be in connections with the rules of his God. Our only chance is to find something to bring against him in his relationship with God. And so that's what they set out to do. You see, I think oftentimes in our life, we're tricked into buying into one of the biggest lies ever. And that one really big lie is this. That when I start to do God's will for my life, when I start to do the things that he's calling me to do, everything will get easy, right? When we start to push forward for the kingdom and we start to stand up for our city and we start to stand up for our world, that's when life begins to get smooth because we're doing what God's asking us to do. That everything should just become easy for us. And this morning, while I wish I could stand here and tell you, absolutely, that's how it's going to work. That's how it works with God. That once you start doing things for him, everything gets easy. Unfortunately, what I have to tell you is that couldn't be further from the truth. The truth is that once we start moving forward and pushing forward for the kingdom, that's actually when we begin to face the most opposition in our lives. And it's not because we're fighting against people, but it's because we're fighting against the darkness of this world. And when we begin to take a stand for God, and I know this is weighty for some of us, but when we begin to take a stand for God, there is nothing that the Prince of Darkness wants more than to sit you back down in your chair. And he will fight tooth and nail to make sure that happens in each and every one of our lives. He will throw everything but the kitchen sink up against you to have you just sit back down. It'll only be for a moment. Just sit. It'll only be for a little bit of time. Just sit back. This world doesn't need you that much right now. You've done enough. Just sit back down. And he will use anything and everything, even well-meaning people that have great intentions in their life, but he'll use them to sort of pick and gnaw at you, to sit you down when you know you need to stand up. You see, if you hear nothing else this morning, I want you to get this. If you are not ready to face opposition in your stand for our city and in your stand for the world, then you are not ready to be used by God. Y'all okay? If we are not ready as a church to face opposition in our stand for our city and in our stand for the world, we are not ready to be used by God. You see, I know this is a hard one to grasp and buy into, but the truth is that we should be more worried when there's no opposition. Right, for those of you who are coaches or who have ever played sports, maybe you've heard the phrase before, you should be more worried when I stop yelling at you. Because that means you're so far gone that it's not worth wasting my time. You see, when Satan is not throwing opposition against us, you know what that means? We're not doing anything worthwhile. We're not doing jack squat for the world around us. When life starts to get easy, that's when we should be worried. Because standing for our city means that when we stand up, people will try to tear us down. And that's okay. That's okay. We will face that head on and we will continue to stand up. And we'll know That's what's going to happen. That's the hardship that's coming. But we press forward and we push in to what God is calling us to as individuals and as a church. The second thing, oh, this is a good one. Hang on to this one. The second truth that Daniel realized was this. Kneeling to pray is what gives us the strength to stand. Kneeling to pray is what gives us the strength to stand. And I think this is one of my favorite parts of the story. You see, between 5 and 10, we're going to jump into Daniel 6:10, but between 5 and 10, King Darius gets tricked by his own men that he's going to lay down these decrees that if anybody kneels down before any god but the Babylonian gods, they will be sentenced to death. And in the Babylonian kingdom, let's do it as a public, gruesome display. Let's throw them to the lions. And so he gets backed into a corner. He said, oh, sure, that'll show that I'm powerful. That's good. That's a good idea, guys. Let's go ahead. Let's do that. Let's throw that one in there. And we pick up the story when Daniel hears of the decree that King Darius throws out. Here's what it says in verse 10. Now, when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he's nuts. He went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened towards Jerusalem. Three times a day, he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had before. Talk about a guy that's nuts, that's crazy, sold out to God. Who's willing to stand for his city, for his people, for what he knows is right for those around him, no matter what is thrown in his way. Here we have a guy who chooses that when he hears this decree, you know what, I'm going to do what's right. I'm going to continue to do what's right. I'm going to continue to live by the motto that God has always been faithful to me. He has never turned his back on me. And because of that, I will not turn my back on him. I know what he's calling me to. I know he's calling me to stand. And I will not sit down. And because of that, if I'm going to stand strong, if I'm going to push through, if I'm going to be what my neighbors, what my city needs me to be, the only thing that's going to keep me going strong is if I spend time every single day kneeling before my God, putting myself at his disposal. Now, I don't know about you, but when it comes to my life, and see if you relate to this, because I would venture to guess that maybe at least some of you fall into the same boat as me. But when I'm trying to get through something in my life, when I'm going through hardship, normally what I do is I go through everything else I can, and then I finish with prayer. And I tend to live under the motto of, if nothing else works, then all we can do now is pray. Really? All we can do now is pray? Come on, Ben Carver. What if we really began to live by, if nothing else, we pray? If we do nothing else, we pray. You see, that's what Daniel lived by. That in order for me to stand up, I'm going to put prayer first. I'm going to make it a priority. I'm going to recognize that my day has to start. I need a little bit in the middle, and my day has to end every single day by recognizing the power of prayer and that I can't keep going without God on my side. I can't keep going without his strength. And so I'm going to lay myself, really, right? That's what kneeling is. I mean, we get down low and we say, I'm beneath you, God. I need your strength to give me a little bit of strength. You see, I believe with all of my heart that Daniel could stand before men because he knelt before God. Hashtag that one. Daniel could stand before men because he knelt before God. You see, I don't know about you, but I see this in my own life. Sometimes it may be hard to believe, but there are many Sundays where standing up here on this stage scares the living daylights out of me. Maybe it's because I don't really feel comfortable up here, or maybe it's because what I'm about to say scares me to death, or maybe it's a little bit of the combination of the two sometimes. But a lot of times when I walk off this stage, the way I feel about what God said through me and about how my message went, I can see a direct correlation between the mornings that I choose to say, God, I can't do this on my own. And I get down on my knees and I put my face to the floor and I just say, God, I need your help. I need your strength in this. To the times where I walk up here on stage and say, God, I got this. I can do this on my own. I can take care of this. You see, getting down before God is the only thing that will ensure that we continue to stand for our families, that we continue to stand for our city, that we continue to stand for our world. Without that, without this one element of kneeling before God, it is way too easy to quit. It is way too easy to sit down. And so Daniel determined that in his mind. He continued to do what was right. He continued to stand. And yet in the midst of that, there was still this uncertainty and still this opposition to him. And so he had to realize and he had to take hold of this last truth. And this is what we're going to finish with this morning. He realized this. When you do what's right, you can always trust God with the results. When you do what's right, you can always trust God with the results. You see, what I love about this thought is it's this relinquishing of control. It's this realization that when I make the right choices time after time after time, I don't need to control the results. I can hand those back over to God. And we see this with Daniel and King Darius. King Darius is backed into a corner now. He's made the decree. The report comes back. Daniel's been kneeling. And so now I got to follow through. We have to do this for my pride, for my power. I've got to do this. And it says in scripture that King Darius was so grieved by this that he went to his palace and he mourned and he wept because he didn't want to lose Daniel. But he didn't have any other choice. The king doesn't change his mind. And so he threw Daniel into the lion's den. And on the next day, here's what it says in verse 20. When he got there, he called out in anguish. This is King Darius talking. Daniel, servant of the living God, was your God, and check this out. This next little phrase is so great. Was your God, whom you serve so faithfully, able to rescue you from the lions? Who you are committed to doing right to day after day after day. Was he able to rescue you from the lions? Daniel answered, my God sent his angel to shut the lions' mouths so that they would not hurt me. For I have been found innocent in his sight, and I have not wronged you, your majesty. The king was overjoyed and ordered that Daniel be lifted from the den. Not a scratch was found on him, for he had trusted in his God. See, here's the crazy part that I think we so often overlook about the Bible. I think we hear these stories and we look at some of these people of the Bible and we think, well, they knew everything was going to turn out all right. They knew that this was going to go well. When these people were living this, they didn't have a book of the Bible written after them that told them their story was going to work out all right. Daniel had no idea that God was going to shut the mouths of the lions. He had no idea how things were going to turn out. But he made this resolution that was so powerful that it's not up to me to determine how things turn out. I don't have to hold the weight of the results. If I just make the right choices, if I just continue to stand for my city, if I just continue to do what I know God is calling me, what God is calling us to do, I don't have to hold the weight of how things turn out, of how many people come to Christ, of how many people come to this church, of how things work out for this city. I don't have to hold the weight of that on me. If I just choose day after day after day that I'm going to do what's right, then I'm going to follow what God is calling me to do, and I'm going to leave the results up to him. And guess what? As we stand for this city, I can't promise you that everything's going to work out all right. I can't promise you that God's going to shut the mouths of the lions in each and every one of our lives. I can't promise you that. But I can promise you we're talking about a sovereign God who wants what's best for us. And guess what? He knows what's best for us more than I do, more than you do. And he's fighting for us. And what he's asking us to do is, as much as I fight for you, I'm asking you to fight for this city. I'm asking you day after day after day to show them my ferocious love for them. To step out there and to face opposition. To know hardship is coming and to say, I don't care. I'm not sitting down. I don't care what you can throw at me, world. I'm going to do what's right. I'm going to kneel before God. And when I do, I will trust him with whatever comes. With whatever and however he wants to work things out. You see, even if he doesn't shut the mouths of lions in my life, I'm asking you to take a stand with me. That from this day forward, I will stand strong for my city. I will stand strong for my world. Because we live in a city and we live in a world that desperately needs the church to be the hope of the world. And they will only see that hope as we live it out and we show God's love through our actions day after day after day.